Hi, I'm Senator Bob Doomspeak, and I'm running for re-election. I believe in America, and in America's capacity for greatness. I also believe that abortion should not only be legal, but mandatory, and that our disgusting race should be torn from the soil of the earth like a diseased fruit tree. When I talk to normal, hardworking Americans, they tell me of their struggles, how hard it is to find a job, the stress of trying to make ends meet. And I look them right in the eye, and I tell them, my lust for murder cannot be sated. I will swim to hell on a river of your blood and take my place upon Satan's throne. And that's the America I dream of. An America where every good citizen has a chance to die by my hands and build a bridge of bones to a brighter tomorrow. I'm Senator Bob Doomspeak, and I approve of this message. And now, the Post Culture Podcast.
The first tiny inkling that something was seriously wrong was the tiny, itchy bumps that started to grow on the sides of my wrists. They were hardly noticeable at first, the two tiny knobs, one on each side. I hardly gave them a second thought, confusing them for mosquito bites. But then, the unbearable itching, scratching at the miserable nubs started to consume the better part of my waking hours. I clawed at them unstoppably, even began to chew at them when mere scratching failed to bring any relief. I was obsessed with the thought that something was alive under my skin, some growing, writhing parasite nibbling at my flesh. Then, one blessed morning, after succumbing to exhaustion, I woke to find the pain and itching had subsided. The twin creatures devouring me from within, finding scant nourishment in my thin, bony wrists, had finally died of starvation. I peered closely at the little protrusions, which could hardly be called bumps anymore, having elongated, worm-like, into blunt-ended tubes. I showed them to my puzzled friends, hoping to find some explanation for what was happening to me. Though they all expressed sympathy for me and my bizarre affliction, not one of them had any answers. And then, to my great consternation, other changes started to develop. Every few days, some horrifying new mutation twisted my anatomy. My hair started to fall out in large, black clumps. I started to lose my peripheral vision as my eyeballs drifted closer together across my skull. My knees ceased to bend at all, and then, grotesquely, started one day to bend in the opposite direction. My teeth wore down to flat, dull little rectangles, making it difficult to chew my food. Most disturbingly, I lost a source of great pride. My long, bushy, luxurious tail simply fell right off, plucked off my ass by a stiff wind, as if it were a dead leaf from a tree. Speaking of trees, my newfound deformities left me unable to climb the tall, comfortable maple that had been my home since I first left my mother's nest 2 springs ago. I tried to call out to my friends for help, but my voice came out all wrong. My familiar screeches and clicks were replaced by a startlingly loud, trumpeting bellow. All the other squirrels, failing to recognize the wretched, furless mutants squawking at them from the ground, pelted me with acorns until I was forced to flee in disgrace. Ostracized, sobbing great, salty tears, I huddled beneath the roots of a nearby elm, shivering against the cold and missing the warmth of my thick, furry tail that I used to wrap around myself on chilly autumn nights. Over the next few weeks, I discovered two interesting abilities my ugly new body had afforded me. After several failed attempts and numerous cuts and abrasions, I found it far more efficient to walk upright than to scrabble about on all fours. My once lithe and slender body had become stocky and relatively inflexible. My delicate spine thickened and hardened to support the mass of muscle that developed across my chest and along my arms. With practice, I could even run along on my hind legs, if not with the same darting speed I once had, then at least quickly enough to evade the occasional menacing owl or hungry snake. The other ability I stumbled across was far more subtle, but I somehow knew it was far more important. I could control the two fleshy knobs that grew on my wrists. They move in opposition to my clawless fingers, so that I can close them against each other, allowing me to grasp onto things. It didn't take long for me to find a couple of uses for my grabbing skills. First, I was able to crack open the shell of an acorn by banging a rock against it. Then, cornered by an enormous beetle with bad intentions, I picked up a sharp stick and thrust it through its iridescent carapace, killing it instantly. However, for every benefit my mutations had blessed me with, it seemed I found several crippling disadvantages. My eyes, in addition to drifting around with the front of my head, had also shrunk pitifully, almost entirely ruining my night vision. My ears, too, migrated lower and became small and nearly useless. My once cavernous, powerful snout, able to sniff out a predator from 100 yards, had been reduced to a pitiful round bulb in the middle of my face. The decimation of my senses left me feeling vulnerable and scared. One morning, I was laying on the dewy moss, listening to the birds chirping to each other and contemplating the vibrant red and brilliant oranges of a maple tree. The low-angled rays of the sunrise seemed to set all the colors ablaze. For the first time, I was seeing a tree, not as a potential home or a shelter for predators or a source of food, but as something of aesthetic value, something beautiful and alive. It was alive just as surely as I. I wondered how long the tree had been alive. How much longer it would be alive. I wondered how much longer I would be alive. With a gasp, I realized the answer was not forever. I was going to die someday. What was the point of being alive if it all just ended in death, no matter what you did to avoid it? Whose idea was life, anyway? And what was it like to be dead? I promised to put off finding out for as long as possible. Just then, as fate would have it, the attractive female squirrel I had mated with the spring before came leaping overhead. She was glorious, resplendent in shiny, healthy-looking fur, her lean muscles flexing alluringly as she skittered with breathtaking alacrity from branch to branch. My muscles instinctively flexed, ready to give chase, and my chest nearly collapsed with the sudden weight of loneliness. I was acutely aware that I was a strange and unique creature, and utterly, totally, undeniably alone. I drew in air through my tiny vestigial nose, hoping to pick up the female's heady pheromones, but my puny proboscis was unequal to the task. However, just the memory of the scent, the sensuous female squirrelness of it, that intoxicated and aroused me. The flaccid pink flap that my member had become started to perk up considerably. I found a third use for my new opposable thumbs that day. A disaster in the forest turned into a macabre sort of serendipity for me last week. I was chewing disgustedly on the seed of an acorn. What was once a primary staple of my diet had become bitter and acerbic in my mouth, a chore to eat. It seemed that though my senses of sight, smell, and hearing had become sorely diminished, my sense of taste became more refined, but to my detriment. I could no longer enjoy the foods it once savored. Acorns tasted foul. Roots tasted of dirt, and eventually, even the sickeningly sweet juices of scavenged berries failed to sustain me. I was starving. I heard a sudden rustle of leaves and turned to see a huge deer, easily 8 times my height, bound out toward me from behind a bush. I rolled hard to my left as a sharp ebony hoof big around as my chest, thumped down powerfully on the spot I had just vacated. My poor acorn was mercilessly crushed into the mud. With a few quick flashes of the bright white flag of its tail, the bucket disappeared into the woods. Cautiously, I turned to see what it was the frightened stag had been in such a hurry to get away from. I followed the deep craters of its tracks backwards along the fleeing path. I smelled it before I saw it. My pathetic nose had finally provided some useful information. Smoke. My pulse quickened as an adrenaline poured into my bloodstream. Whatever it was I had become, I was still enough of a forest creature to instinctively know that smoke meant fire. The fire meant pain and destruction and death. I tried in vain to scramble up a tree to get a good vantage of the conflagration, but the slippery pads of my hands and feet wouldn't allow me to catch purchase. In the end, I panicked and fled as fast and as far as I could, as the wild deer had done. In due course, the flames had consumed all available fuel, and finding nothing more to feed upon, disappeared, leaving behind a bleak, charred landscape. Eventually, my curiosity overcame my fear, and I made my way back to the site of the devastation. Sidestepping the still smoking debris and avoiding a few scattered glowing embers, I explored the hellish territory, ashes and soot darkening my legs with every step. A scent new to my experience stopped me cold. It was a burnt smell, of course, but there was a different tang to it, something savory and not altogether unpleasant. My stomach reflexively gurgled, and my mouth filled with saliva. A fierce need, an overwhelming craving, every bit as powerful as the trance-like berserk lust of the mating season, seized hold of my nerves. I eagerly followed the aroma back to its source. A squirrel, pinned at the tail by a fallen branch and seared by the blaze, lay temptingly at my feet. Circumstances had presented me with an unspeakable dilemma. Every fiber of my being not only suggested, but demanded that I make a meal of the unfortunate rodent. But another force, equally compelling, filled me with loathing and disgust at the obvious wrongness of the idea. It seemed my emergent conscience, an unwanted bonus prize that came with my new body, was to face its first test. The poor squirrel had been burned so badly I couldn't recognize him. His ears had wilted, his fur singed, and his skin blistered and peeled, exposing the flesh below. Was this a friend of mine? A neighbor? One of my 18 brothers? Another loud rumble from my stomach snapped me from my reverie. Hunger started to chip at my resolve and dull my sense of morality. If I didn't turn and run soon, I would surely succumb to the base need that threatened to overwhelm me. And yet, I stayed. I felt as though who or whatever it was that created the universe, some all-powerful deity, had with a snap of fingers halted planetary orbits and silenced the music of the spheres just to watch closely and see what I would do. My frantic brain, desperate to sate the screaming hunger signals jolting its circuitry, became sharp, focused, rational, and unemotional. Why should I relate so strongly to this animal? I only had to look at what I'd become to see that it and I were no longer the same. I had become something other, something superior. Surely I couldn't be judged too harshly if I were to. I couldn't even make myself think the words. Better to stop thinking and just do it. I shut my eyes and reached forward to tear off a strip of meat. The moment I touched the squirrel's neck, it flinched away. I opened my eyes, unbelievingly, to see the sorry son of a bitch returning my gaze. His wet, dark eye was dumb with fear and excruciating pain. I could see my reflection in the inky pupil. I suppose I should have felt pity for the thing, and on some level, I probably did. But the emotion that bubbled up most powerfully inside me was anger, rage, resentment. I'd gone my entire life, nearly 3 whole years, without once considering whether what I did was morally right or sinfully wrong. And now that I knew the difference, I wanted no part of it. It was a huge, crushing burden. And this animal, this thing, this meat, was making a mockery of this debilitating handicap. And it would pay dearly for its transgression. I bent to pick up the heaviest rock I could carry, hefted it over my head, and screaming, brought it down blow after blow on the creature's skull until it shattered and collapsed into a pulp. I dropped the rock, slippery with blood and gray matter, opened my mouth wide, and took a ravenous bite from the doomed squirrel's neck. A rush of power and energy, like life itself, flowed through my body, and like so many other damnable offenses, it tasted so, so sweet. Later, I laid drowsily in the grass, rubbing my tumescent belly and belching contentedly. I had gorged myself until I felt I would split at the sides, then collapsed in a vertiginous euphoria. The euphoria was short-lived, however. Almost as soon as my racing pulse had slowed, regret began seeping insidiously into my chest. I'd lost control, allowed my willpower to buckle, and committed a shameful act of quasi-cannibalism. I sighed. Nothing I ever did as a squirrel made me feel ashamed and weak and so starkly evil. Was it going to be like this for the rest of my life? Constantly torn in a struggle between my self-serving desires and soul-wrenching guilt? It felt like an obscenity, perversion, something unlovable and unnatural in a perfect world. At that moment, I saw him, someone like me. Well, almost like me. We had similar features, two arms, two legs, and burless, gangly bodies. But he was a giant, a mammoth 6 feet tall, towering far above my own 10-inch stature. He strode in my direction, his body wrapped in some sort of soft-looking covering, colored to mimic the surrounding forest. Over his shoulder, he carried some sort of shining stick that glinted in the sun. I hid in the grass, paralyzed with fear. Some almighty being had been watching and judging me, after all. He had no choice but to find me guilty, and now he was seeking me to carry out the sentence. Or maybe justice wasn't what he intended. He certainly didn't have a wrathful expression on his face. In fact, he didn't seem to notice me at all. Maybe, I thought, if he was the creator of such a beautiful world, he was kind and forgiving. Perhaps, if I just dared to reach out to him, he could save me from these evil impulses that possessed me. I made up my mind to make my presence known. If he could save me, it was worth the risk. If punishment was his goal, surely it would be just and well-deserved. I mustered my courage and yelled out to him, falling to my knees in supplication.
Epilogue. From the desk of J. Edward Fulp, editor, New York Daily News. Dear Mr. Yardley, thank you for submitting your letter to the Daily News. While I personally enjoyed your account of the time you were on a hunting trip and you found your blue tick hound Cooter chewing on a naked elf or fairy or something, it isn't the sort of story a serious news organization like ours would cover. I did show your cleverly photoshopped pictures around the office, and everyone had a good laugh. Needless to say, we won't be sending out a reporter to your home to check out the little dead fella you saved in your deep freeze. I suggest you submit your story to the Weekly World Update or some other trashy tabloid. Pieces on elves, fairies, gnomes, leprechauns, and other imaginary creatures are right in their wheelhouse. They eat that kind of bullshit with a spoon. Best regards, J. Edward Fulp. Do you remember a better America? A time when there was equality of opportunity and the economy felt like it was working for you? I'm Senator Bob Doomspeak, and it will be my first order of business upon being re-elected to have the part of your brain that remembers such things cut out, because you are obviously hopelessly psychotic. As senator, my main legislative priority is the feeding of pure toxic sludge directly into the mouths of our nation's children. Every American should have an equal opportunity to be hacked to death with a machete by their own grandmother. I think our economy should be devoted entirely to the production of baby-sized coffins and hallucinogenics. The American worker should be dosed with amphetamines all day, sedatives all night, and eat nothing but pork fat until it comes time for the culling. If this is the America you believe in, vote for me. Vote for the man who will cut your brain open. I'm Senator Bob Doomspeak, and I approve this message.
You gonna need somebody when you come to death. You gonna need somebody when you come to death. I will point you out, a man. King Jesus is his name. You gonna need somebody when you come to death. Yes, I got a lawyer to go my bone. Well, I got a lawyer go my bone. Well, I find you out a man.
Greetings, science knots. It's time for another glimpse into the wonders of the universe with that wizard of physics, the professor, and his young assistant, Jimmy. So, Jimmy, are we ready for another bold leap forward into the world of science?
Gee whiz, Professor, I sure am.
All right, then. For today's experiment, I've cloned your dog.
You cloned Gussie? Oh, wow. Two Gussies. That's amazing.
Yep. Here's the clone.
Oh, wow. It looks just like him.
Yes. And here's a loaded pistol.
What? What's that for?
Well, you see, Jimmy, this clone is an abomination. It needs to be destroyed.
What are you saying?
Take the pistol, Jimmy.
But...
Take it. Hold it with both hands and point it at this freak dog's head.
But I...
Do what needs to be done, Jimmy.
But it looks just like Gussie.
It's not Gussie, Jimmy. It's a freak. It can't be allowed to live.
I don't know. I...
Do it, Jimmy. Do it in the name of science.
Okay. Okay. For science! Oh my god!
Good work, Jimmy. Now, Jimmy, I have something to tell you.
What's that, Professor?
I never cloned your dog, Jimmy.
What?
That wasn't a clone, Jimmy. I lied.
I don't understand. What are you saying?
You're a man now, Jimmy.
Thank you.
children so patiently play. But now they abuse and revile him. Here at last in Katanga.
America. Just the word gives me a thrill. I believe in a stronger America. A prouder America. An America that listens to the messages that I send out via shortwave radio from the floating island garbage fortress I call home. I stand up for Americans who want to fill their own mouths with cement. I stand up for Americans who think it's their right to inject genetically modified superheroin right into their own genitalia. I stand up for Americans who think we should destroy the moon. You want to eat unlabeled organ meat without a lot of questions? That's my America. My opponent doesn't think America should get tough on crime, whereas I believe in capital punishment for any conceivable activity, including listening to this message. I'm Senator Bob Doomspeak, and I approve this message.
Wonder why is my Butcherman at now? I've been looking for him all day long. Butcherman! Man, why have you been so long? Butcher man, why have you been so long? I can't catch at the butcher shop, and you're so hard to find at home. I'm going to tell everybody I've got the best butcher man.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Post Culture Podcast, 90% Doomed. Music in this episode was provided by The Fourth Shift, who you can follow on Twitter at @fourth_shift or at fourthshift.bandcamp.com, and by Dr. Quandary, who you can check out at his website, Dr., all spelled out, Quandary.com. Additional music was provided by The Carter Family, Charlie Patton, Henry Null, and Memphis Minnie. The extended piece about the squirrel that turns into a tiny man, called Something Other, was written by Twitter user Sir Eviscerate. That's SirEviscerate. Please follow him on Twitter. Be sure to tell secrets to the hold music while you're waiting. Remember, your call is very important to them.